My name is Paige Firth. I'm a proud Aboriginal woman from the Jarrawarra tribe of Northern Queensland. On behalf of the Call Out podcast, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land we meet upon today, the Wathaurong people of the Kulin Nation. We would like to pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging and acknowledge that sovereignty was never ceded. We also acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognise the continuing connection to lands, waterways and communities.
1, 2, 3, 4! Call It Out is a podcast led by students from Sacred Heart College and St Joseph's College in Geelong. Listening through the lens of young people, the podcast episodes are an insightful journey into contemporary issues impacting them, discussing the themes such as gender equality, unhealthy masculinity, everyday sexism, healthy relationships and consent, we are given an intimate invitation into what young people think.
3, 2, 1, yeah!
Hi, I'm Zoe, she, her.
I'm Hannah, she, her.
I am Colby, he, him.
I'm Georgia, she, her. Today's episode of On the Call It Out podcast is about gender stereotypes, and we're so excited to have a special guest here today who is living his life authentically and encouraging others to do the same.
Harry Garside, the youngest of three boys, grew up in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne. As a young kid, he originally got into boxing to prove his masculinity, but soon discovered he loved the sport, and with an inspiring coach, Brian Levier, who believed in him and his abilities, he quickly escalated into winning national championships, which led him then to winning gold at the 2018 Commonwealth Games. And then Harry went on to win a bronze medal in the men's lightweight event in the 2022 Summer Olympic Games in Tokyo, which marked the first time in 33 years that an Australian had medaled in boxing at the Olympics. Harry is known for incorporating innovative training techniques such as ballet to improve his success as an elite athlete. But there is much more to Harry. He's a fabulous storyteller and is a passionate advocate for breaking down gender stereotypes, encouraging men and boys to be vulnerable, being comfortable in the uncomfortable, and is on a mission to challenge and inspire young people to be who they want to be.
So Harry, you've had a very busy week, most recently with the GQ Men of the Year Awards. So how have you been?
Yeah, it has. Thank you for the intro. Very nice. But yeah, it has been a busy week so far. It was my first ever awards night that I attended. So I got glammed up with my partner, and it was great to walk the red carpet and get a few photos. And being alongside people like Russell Crowe, Fisher, the DJ, Anthony Albanese, the Prime Minister, was there. It was a weird crowd, but I had a great time.
Awesome to hear.
As an Olympic athlete, especially a boxer, the stereotypical perception is that you have to be masculine. Well, we all obviously know that you're an amazing fighter, and then also can see you painting your nails and doing ballet, typical feminine things to do. We saw you on another interview calling yourself a walking contradiction. So why do you think it's important for people to break out of their mold?
Yeah, I've really been pondering this question recently lately, and I truly believe, and I listened to a podcast yesterday. There's actually a lot of ancient cultures. There was one that they were speaking about on the podcast around the ancient Egypts, and they believed in everything has masculine and feminine inside of it. And I truly believe that too. I think every human has masculine, every human has feminine. Doesn't matter if you're a male or a female. And I think I'm trying to portray that because I've felt that in my life, having a mum that was super left-wing, very spiritual, and then having a dad that was super, I guess, right wing. He was quite conservative and a tradesman. So having the good blend, I sort of felt that I was a good walking contradiction. I was always on a bit of a pendulum between masculine and feminine, left and right. And I like to think that I'm in the middle. And I think there's a lot of beauty in knowing where you are on the pendulum. And for me, going into my masculine and loving that and getting in there and fighting someone and really enjoying that, but then also making sure that I spend just as much time in my feminine so I can balance myself out, as it's like a yin and yang. And I think you can't have one without the other. If you have one of too much of the one side, then it's going to negatively impact you. And the same goes on the other side. So for me, it really helps me balance it out. And I just want people to be happy. That's all it is. And I think I'm slowly but surely navigating this world, and I feel more happy within my own skin. And I think that's because I'm mixing masculine and feminine. I think trying to encourage other people to do the same.
how have you dealt with the gender stereotypes that you've experienced in your life?
Yeah, it was interesting growing up. Like for me, I felt a little bit different. A big part of my story, I felt a little bit different to my two older brothers. They were very masculine, or they seemed very masculine on the outside. And I entered school at the age of 5, and I felt an identity was kind of pushed on me. You mean you're the youngest guy side, you've got to act like this. So what did I do? I went home and I just looked at my brothers and thought, how are they acting? What are they saying? What are they doing? And I went to school from the age of 5 until about 16, 17 years old. And I started playing that. I mean, I was super masculine. I tried extra hard to prove that I was a man. I tried to do all the things that the men were doing. I was fighting in moments that I shouldn't afford. I would say stupid comments. I would get kicked out of class quite often. But up until the age of 16, 17, the Reach Foundation entered my life. And I talk about them so well because they entered my life and they gave me the ability to sort of challenge these gender stereotypes that I felt I needed to play to fit in or to be a man. And I'm so grateful they entered my life because all that happened from the age of 16, 17, I started to go internal and learn to love myself, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and realize that I do have a super masculine side, but then I also do have a super feminine side. And I feel a lot more confident in my own skin because I've actually gone internal and I've asked myself a lot of questions, and I feel a lot more confident to show that feminine side while also still maintaining that masculine side as well.
Mm. I think that's a super important point for our young people as well, to talk about expressing our emotions and kind of thinking about both feminine and masculine sides, celebrating both of them. So as you've just mentioned about the Reach Foundation, for our audience members who aren't sure about what they do, can you give a little bit of a description of what their purpose is?
Yeah, so they entered my school. I had absolutely no idea who they were, but at 16 years old, the teacher said, you're going to get a day off school. So I'm thinking, how good is this? Great, day off school. But they're a youth organization. And the unique thing about the Reach Foundation, it's the youth organization run by the youth. So there's, in the office, there's not many people over the age of 25. So a lot of people are very connected to the youth and what's going on. And it's beautiful. But they entered my school and they ran a workshop. It was just the males in my class. So it was all the men. There was about 60, 70 people that turned up. And, yeah, to share that experience with all my mates and stuff like that and all my boy mates was fantastic. And I then joined the Reach organization where I became a crew member. And through the crew member, we did some school workshops, some community workshops. We did camps on the weekend. A lot of community-based stuff, and it's all working with young people to to realize their full potential and to go more internal and ask yourself questions. Because as a teenager, I remember exactly what it's like. The world's a crazy place and a lot's happening in your body. I remember I had an issue when I was a teenager and I thought it was the end of the world. So I can totally empathize. There's a lot happening in your body throughout your teenage years, and you're trying to fit in, you're trying to, you make sure you're part of the core group potentially, or you're trying to make sure you get good grades to impress your parents, or there's so many things happening. And I think the Reach Foundation just allows young people to explore and more be their true authentic self, which is a big part of my story.
So good. You mentioned before about your older brothers and your father, and I know that, you know, in society now, a lot of boys feel like they need to be more masculine to hide their femininity, especially due to people in their lives. So how do you think young people can overcome this, or even society can overcome this?
Yeah, that's, I wish I had like a really beautiful answer to this, but it's really difficult. And I think the reality is every human's different and every family environment's different. And I'm super fortunate that I suppose I have just a touch more confidence, and I don't know exactly where that comes from. Potentially starting the sport of boxing gave me a lot of confidence, and slowly but surely the Reach Foundation and boxing blended together. And then I had this ability to sort of, start showing my true authentic self. And of course there was times that my parents, or not my mum as such, but my dad and my brothers would sort of joke around and I guess bully me for some of the things that I did. I was being a bit more flamboyant at home, or I would I enjoy doing things like that. Or I'd watch movies like High School Musical or Bring It On, and my brothers would bully me and stuff like that. But slowly but surely, if you continue just living that, and I think there's like a little period when you act a little bit different and people will be a little bit surprised. And but if you keep acting like that, slowly but surely, what I've realized is you start attracting people who accept you for the real you. It might take a bit of time, but my family love me dearly for who I am, and I'm so grateful. But I've realized as well that when I started being my true authentic self, I started to break away from the so-called friends who maybe didn't accept me, or some people in my community who may have not accepted me, but I've just attracted people who accept me for the real me. And I think that's a beautiful thing. It just takes a little bit of time, and there is a period there where you feel a little bit lonely and a bit isolated, but you mean like stand true on who you are, and slowly but surely people start accepting you for the real you.
So Harry, I think by what you've been mentioning, you're sort of discussing masculinity or like gender stereotypes in general as sort of a conscious process, like, consciously doing things that make you seem more masculine or feminine. How true do you think that to be? And do you think it's a very conscious process to kind of reverse those effects?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm super conscious of a lot of the things I do. I must admit, I'm quite impulsive. I do a lot of things just out of the blue, but I reflect pretty hard. And I think reflection, self-awareness, and understanding why and what you're doing. And I think having a level of curiosity, I mean, sometimes we're our own biggest critics. You know, we do something that we're not proud of, or we do something that we wish we didn't do, and then we analyze it and we criticize ourselves, and we sort of, I can only speak for myself, but I chop myself down quite often. And I think having curiosity instead of self-criticism is so valuable, because curiosity for me has just taken away the level of judgment. I'm just curious, and I'm curious, like, why did I do that? Why did I say that? Why was I impulsively doing that? And as well, having the curiosity of knowing where you are and what you need in that moment. And sometimes when my partner, she comes to me and goes, like, hey, I've had a really shit week, or I've had a really bad week, and I'm starting to stress out about money or X, Y, Z. And for me to stand tall in that moment, I guess, show a little bit more of my masculine side and hold her in that moment, it's like that's needed. But then there's also times where I've had a stressful week. I need a vent. But then also knowing what I need in that moment, and to come to my partner and say, hey, I just need you to listen. I've had a really shit week. That's sitting more on my feminine energy. So just knowing what you are, where you are, and what you need, and being really curious, so you take away that judgment and that critiqueness.
So we can see on your Instagram that you just like challenge gender stereotypes with your fashion and with the outfits you wear. And we've also seen that the response has been mixed, but mainly in support of this movement. How and why do you use your fashion to reflect breaking down these gender stereotypes? And why do you think it's so important?
I think it's just, it's one of the easiest ways to do it, to be completely honest. Of course, don't get me wrong, the best way to do it is through conversation. I don't think you're going to have the best impact by just changing your clothing, but I think it's the easiest way to do it, because how we all have eyes, well, most of us have eyes, and we can see, and it's a big part of our, we like to view people and then we put them into brackets of X, Y, Z. But for me, being someone who has a mullet, I've got a mustache at the moment, I've got tattoos on my leg and dressing up in these clothes, and I look like a boxer, but then I'm wearing these clothes, and I think it starts asking people, make people ask themselves questions, I think that's why I'm doing it, because it starts the conversation. But I think the biggest impact is by doing what we're doing right now and having conversations, because so often, especially on social media right now, we can comment to someone on the opposite side of the world and we can send them a little sentence. That sentence could ruin the whole week, because it's so hurtful or whatever. But through conversation, we can really understand. And I love having conversations with people who don't respect what I'm doing. So we can actually have a conversation and understand, because I realize that, we all care about very similar things. We want our family, we want our friends, and we want ourselves to be healthy, happy, and well off. That's what we all want. That's the reality. And doesn't matter if you don't like what I do or you do like what I do. We all want the same things. And when we have good conversations, that's when I think we have the best impact, and we can sort of go together in the right directions towards a better future.
Yeah. So obviously you've spoken just now about the importance of clothing and our physical appearance as it drives our perception of feminine and masculine qualities. But also with the importance of starting a conversation and being in an uncomfortable situation sometimes. So you've been on doing uncomfortable challenges once a month and you've done so many amazing things. Why do you think it's important to challenge yourself and try these hard things? And how can we create or endorse uncomfortable challenges within our school community or our local community to challenge these rigid gender stereotypes?
Yeah, it's something that I've been doing for 4 years now. I challenge once a month, and some have been really difficult. Some have been just a lot of fun. So, yeah, I think a big part, or what I always encourage people to do is, well, I give an explanation of what the uncomfortable challenges mean. So I truly believe as humans, the only place we grow are the places that are hard, the places that are uncomfortable. It's why so often after a loss, or you mean after something bad happens in your life or something that really affects you in your life, you then have this post-traumatic growth. You mean a lot of people propel forward after that, or they reflect more, or in athletes, they have a massive loss 1 year and then the next year they go and win a premiership, or they go win a massive game. So I think only in the areas where we feel most uncomfortable and we feel most alive do we grow. And that's why I've been putting myself in these uncomfortable situations. And I think I always recommend dance class, because it's for me, unless you're a professional dancer, or unless you do dance classes quite often, I feel so nervous, even still now, and I've been doing it for a couple of years, but I feel so nervous before doing a dance class. I get in there, I'm sort of hiding in the back, I'm watching my body language, it's not as confident. And then I do the dance class and I realize that no one's really judging. Everyone's just focusing on themselves and they're just moving and flowing. And then you walk out of that dance class and your shoulders are a little bit wider, you're standing a little bit taller. And I think for me, realizing that's what I do it for, that feeling post the dance class. And if anyone's looking for something to do, I think that's a great place to start.
Just talking about, you know, gender stereotypes, I guess, and doing things that are uncomfortable to break down these stereotypes, what challenges do you think you could give young people and like people in communities to really break down these gender stereotypes themselves, break down the barriers, you know?
Yeah, this is a question that like I think online it's quite interesting, because online I can cop a lot of criticism, especially probably more so from the older generation. And when I reflect about the world, I reflect that when we're young, we're quite vibrant, and not everyone's like this, but I think on a scale, it's like when we're young, I mean, we're so vibrant and we love exploring the world. We're very curious. And then slowly but surely, potentially things happen to us throughout our life and we become a little bit more conservative and we don't like challenging things as much. And I think you watch the older generations there, I mean, they're just a touch more negative, I guess, or conservative. And as I said, this isn't everyone, but I think on a scale. So it's hard to answer this question, but I think you should just do it out of a place of following your heart and what your heart tells you to do, because I think as humans and as young people, we're so, we can listen to our instinctual. We have that gut instinct, and I think slowly but surely our logical brain as we grow older will take control. And I think that's where the older generations are at. They're in their logical brain a lot more. And I think when we're younger, we're just in that more animal instinct, and we can listen to our heart, we can listen to our gut and what that wants. And we're not as infiltrated by I guess what our logical brain will tell us. And I think the only advice I could give is just listening to your heart. And if your heart makes you feel like you're making the right decision, if your gut tells you you're making the right decision, then I think you're making the right decision. And the way you can challenge gender stereotypes, that's different for every human. Every human is very different, unique and versatile, and they have a different way they look at the world. But just listening to your heart, I think you can't make a wrong decision.
Yeah. That's such good advice, I think.
Yeah, I love that. I was just going to say, following up from what you said about how as we're younger children, we tend to be more creative, more curious, more expressive of who we are and accepting everything around us and not necessarily being as influenced by the social barriers or these rigid gender stereotypes. Do you think that this would have quite an impact, especially going into high school in our younger years, say year 7 and 8, when people are trying to find themselves?
Yeah, it's, I guess I can only view the lens through what I experienced when I was in year 7 and 8, but I definitely did so much to try and fit in when I was younger. All I wanted to do was It's quite interesting. I said this recently, so I go off on tangents. My brain works in a weird way, but it's quite interesting because when I was younger, all I wanted to do was to fit in. I wanted to be like everyone else, and I wanted everyone to like me. You know, I wanted to have heaps of friends. But what I've realized is the older you get, the more different, the more unique, the more special you are as an individual. It's actually a superpower. We spend so much time, and I get it, it's kind of a bit of a human need to feel connected to a group and to feel like people are, you know, liking you and enjoying your company, and because we feel safe. And as humans, we're animals. We want to feel safe. We want to feel like we're part of the tribe. But the older I've got, the more I've realized the more individuality, the more uniqueness. Yeah, I guess the more independence, the more self you have. It's actually a bit of a superpower. So I don't wish I changed anything in my life, but I wish when I was younger I knew that. I wish when I was in year 7, year 8, year 9, grade 6, I wish I knew that it's actually a superpower to be a little bit different, to be a little bit unique. And I think if we can tell more young people that it's okay to be different, and the community or the school that you're in accepted individuality and everyone walked a little bit different, walked a little bit more funky, I think the world would be a pretty cool place.
So going off that, what would be the one piece of advice you'd give our listeners, which is mainly a lot of school students, on how to make sure that they embrace themselves, especially at this pivotal age, when it feels like you have to conform? So what would be like the one piece of advice that you'd give?
Well, this is a great question. It's a hard one to answer because, as I mentioned before, everyone is a little bit different. But I think it's like only us as individuals know who we are. Only us. And sometimes when we're young, we might not know. And I think only through trial and error, only through, I guess, having the ability to fall and stumble if it's something that you might fail or not succeed in, but only through trial and error will we really find out who we are. Quite often we start something and if it lights you up, continue doing it. I mean, there's a famous quote, go to the places where you feel most alive. And if, I don't know, maybe the stereotypical jock, you mean like the Troy Bolton, the High School Musical, likes musicals. If that makes you feel alive, go do it. Who cares? And if you're, I guess, more artistic, but then you go play volleyball and it lights you up, go to the place where you feel most alive.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah. So obviously this podcast is called the Call It Out podcast. So I was just wondering, like, what are some ways that you can call out, like, the sort of perpetuation of these negative gender stereotypes?
Yeah, that's something I've really pondered recently. DR Khan, she's one of my favorite humans in this world. She's a Muslim journalist from Norway. And she, in two series she did some TV series, or a movie, sorry, documentary. And on one, she sat down with white supremacists. And then on another, she sat down with jihadists in the Middle East. So obviously two groups of people she does not agree with. She does not like anything they're about. But through the process of being with them and listening and understanding their point of view, and rather than critiquing and just going, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, I mean, through the ability of just listening and hearing their story throughout time, in one of the series, she actually made the head of the white supremacist group leave. He left that life, that lifestyle, and he started a new life. And I think that's what happens when, instead of critiquing and criticizing and saying, you're wrong, you're this, you're a bigot, you're racist, you're homophobic, whatever, I actually don't think that fixes anyone. I don't think that changes anyone. I actually think that makes them plant their feet harder and they go, you know, I am right, and you're F you, and then there's more of a divide. I think only through listening and having real conversations like this, even with people we don't agree with, I think only through that can we grow together and start, I guess, a new conversation. But I think right now it's just a lot of like, you're wrong, you're this. I don't actually think that works. And that's only my opinion. But yeah, I think only through listening and trying to understand their point of view and slowly but surely showing them a different point of view, will you actually have the best impact on changing, the more negative gender-based stuff.
I was going to ask about your boxing career, really. The boxing community, obviously you've been involved in that for a while now. Do you think that it's old-fashioned, considering it's like quite a I'd say it's been seen as quite a masculine institution in the past. So do you think it's quite old fashioned in its beliefs and stuff?
Yeah, it's just been around for so long. I guess it would be quite similar to, I know, like the royal family in a sense. Like boxing has been around for so long, and the royal family, of course, they're slowly but surely adapting to the new times. Like they still sit a certain way and they have to do certain things. Like there's just so much tradition, and it's as we were talking about before, around like the older you get, the more conservative I think you get. And I think that's because, I don't know, I've thought about this today, but I think it's like the older generation have gone, oh, we've got this far and our life has been okay. So why change? Why change? What's that saying? Don't change something that's not broken. And I get that. You mean, so I think a lot of the boxing community is like that. They're like, don't bring this newness, don't bring this nuance. You mean, boxing's not broken. It doesn't need to happen. But there is a lot of beautiful people in the boxing community. There is, of course, just like any industry, some negative people as well. But I think all in all, people accept me for whatever I'm doing, and I'm okay if they don't accept me. I'll continue doing what I'm doing, and hopefully through time I can have a conversation with the people who don't accept me and maybe change their belief. I don't know. If not, that's okay too.
Yeah.
So what response did you get when you picked ballet, which is quite the opposite from boxing, among like the boxing community, but also just people you knew and the world?
Yeah, it was quite interesting. I started in 2019, and yeah, the first sort of like, I guess, 6 months of doing it and telling people, they were like, ballet, what are you doing ballet for? I remember telling my boxing coach, who's almost 80, ballet, mate, you're going to do boxing, not ballet. I'm like, but like he actually, like slowly but surely, he saw how useful it was. And I think I try to explain to him that there's actually so many similarities between the two. And I think about dance as well. I think when we're hunters and gatherers, that's what we are. We're animals. How was the way that we communicated? A lot of the time it was through dance and through song. So when I do a dance class, I actually feel this overwhelming sense of animal, hunters and gatherers, sort of ancestral energy going through my body. And I think it's quite unique and beautiful. And if it's not ballet, I think any form of dance for any athlete is really valuable because it's really flowy and it's coordination, rhythm, so many things that are really valuable for being an athlete. But I've thoroughly enjoyed, but there definitely was a few raised eyebrows at the start.
Do you encourage people, I guess, who play, I don't know, sports like boxing? You know, you mentioned the similarities between them. Like, do you think the similarities are overlooked? Do you think there are more probably benefits than...
Yeah, there's, well, 150%, there's more benefits than there are. It's just like, I think what I found as well, obviously there's actually like technically there's so many similarities. The transferring of the weight, the power they generate through their legs, it's very similar to boxing. The discipline, the strictness, you can't have chewing gum in your mouth, you can't turn your back to the bar, you can't wear a watch. There's so many things. Your teacher's breathing down your throat. There's so many things that are very similar to boxing. But I think getting in there and just having a crack and doing something that you're actually really bad at, what I found, it's humbling, one. But then also as well, you're growing and evolving really quickly because you've never done it before. When you're really bad at something, each week you're making 5% progression. In boxing, I'm lucky to make 0.5% progression in a week because I've been doing it for so long. So to get something where you're making a little bit of progression, you're learning a little bit differently. And then you take that to boxing and then you start seeing things a little bit differently. You start feeling a little bit more positive. And I think that's a valuable thing, whether it be dance, but starting something that you're really bad at and being okay with being humbled and being okay with being really bad at it, because slowly but surely you get better and then you actually bring that into other areas of your life too. Yeah.
I think it's definitely refreshing that you've spoken about joining ballet within only a few years. I think for a lot of our young people, it's kind of a stereotype that if you want to be, you have to be firstly good at a sport, but you have to join when you're in those early years, like 5, 6, 7, 8. But also you've mentioned in previous interviews how you want to introduce combat sports and boxing within the school system, either in Australia or globally, as it can strengthen independence and our sense of belonging. How does this help with making kids feel safe in their gender and help fight stereotypes of gender within the school environment?
Yeah, it's honestly one of my life goals is to bring combat sport into the school system. As for me, I guess I can only speak about the things that boxing has taught me. It's taught me self-respect, self-love, knowing what my body's capable of and what my body isn't. Discipline, respect for myself, but also more importantly, respect for others. Grit, and I think a sense of this self-confidence. I mean, quite often at the early stages of my boxing career, I was quite insecure. I was trying to prove that I was a man. And then slowly but surely through boxing and through many other things as well, I've become a lot more, I guess I had a lot more self-worth and I started to challenge these insecurities inside myself. And now in moments where in public, I mean, someone may say something to me or online, someone says something to me, like, I think for me through combat sport, I'm a lot more calm and I have a lot more self-worth and I don't need to go there. I think people who do dumb stuff when they're older are usually the ones who are most insecure and I feel for them. But I think if more people had combat sport from a young age and learned the valuable lessons that I learned, discipline, grit, self-love, self-care, I think the world would be a bit different of a place. And I can totally understand if it wasn't boxing just because of head trauma and stuff like that, but like wrestling, jiu-jitsu, karate even. There's so many sports that aren't as striking sports, but there's so many beautiful lessons in those sports as well.
Yeah, Harry, I really like the message that you've been putting out in this interview and how you're speaking about introducing combat sports. And I think that really ties into how you are speaking about putting yourself in uncomfortable situations and how that's able to ultimately help you grow and evolve. So is that what, so how do you think that introducing combat sports or different things into the school system would break down those stereotypes, but also boxing and combat sports being traditionally masculine, how do you think that would also negatively affect, like maybe also perpetuating these stereotypes? Or do you think that wouldn't happen?
Yeah, that's a needed question because there is that possibility, I guess, that I think you need to see it out throughout a term or throughout a year, because it's like a young person does one boxing session, it's like that's not going to make a difference. You mean you need to sort of see it out through time, and you need to make sure, one, that you have a really good coach, someone who can command the room really well, who can, you mean, who a lot of the young people look up to and respect. And I think that's really important. But of course, absolutely, they did one or two boxing sessions and they think that they're some fighter potentially. But I think if you did it from grade three, grade four until year seven, year eight, I think that's a good 3, 4, 5 years of just, you mean, everyone learning the art form of the sport. And I think that would be super valuable. But I think if you just did one or two, it wouldn't be very useful. It'd have to be over a long period of time.
And I, just one more thing. I also think that the way that you're portraying yourself and presenting yourself in the media as a person that partakes in combat sport, I feel like that's also a really positive thing for young people wanting to get into that sector or even just playing those sports. I feel like it's such a good thing to be able to see and look up to someone like you who's able to, you know, hold themselves really well and not still be traditionally masculine, but also keep in touch with their feminine side as well. So I think that having you is such a good thing for these young people trying to get into it.
Thank you. That's very kind. As I mentioned, a lot of people in the boxing world are like this too. So they just don't probably have as much of a voice as I do. But I'm pretty proud of myself and the people that I've met throughout my life, throughout the boxing community. But it's a beautiful sport, and I hope more young people can start doing it.
Do you feel like more people are starting to get a voice on social media now? Like they're starting to show like themselves rather than trying to show this kind of image of themselves through social media?
Yeah, it's a bit of a double-edged sword, social media, in the sense of like you're kind of playing a bit of an identity in a sense. So it's like, of course, absolutely, you have this beautifulness and you can have a voice and you can get out there, but it's like only you know what you do when no one's watching. Only you know what you do when you're at a shopping center and you see an old lady carrying a whole bunch of bags. And if you mean you can preach all this stuff online, but it's like if you don't help that lady, it's like the standard you walk past is the standard you accept. And it's like it's a beautiful thing because absolutely it's starting conversation and everyone's got a voice and it is a beautiful thing. But at the same time, it's like I credit people on what they do when no one's watching. You mean when no one's giving you a pat on the back, when no one's liking their photos, when no one's respecting what they're saying. You mean it's more important, I think, to do the things that aren't on camera when no one's watching, as I think that's when you start feeling good about yourself. It's like when you're not looking for praise or adulation or validation. That's for me, I think, when I'm most happy.
With the analogy you've mentioned with a double-ended sword, even when we're creating this podcast, we were speaking about launching social media platforms. And again, it comes into discussion of it can be a really good way to get people aware, raise awareness about this project that we're doing, and to challenge these stereotypes and gender equality within our society. But also you are going to get negative comments whatever you do. So it's really important that our young people are equipped with the knowledge to use these platforms properly.
Yeah, it's something that I really thought about. Like, we're never ever going to lose social media. It's only going to evolve and get bigger, I guess. And I think it's like the generation probably before me, they were given technology and social media and phones, and they were given a vehicle and they didn't know how to drive it. I mean, so they're driving it aimlessly and it's exciting at the start, but then everyone's starting to realize, well, it actually can also negatively impact your mental health, your mental stability and mental clarity. And I think I'm quite optimistic, but I hope that the next generation will grow up with social media. I hope they build a few more tools and through education at school and a few other things that they can realize that your phones are so valuable and absolutely they should be used at your advantage, not at your disposal. And I mean, people are paying billions of dollars to make sure they know how we work as humans so they can keep us trapped on these things. And hopefully through education, the next generations can have a little bit more understanding and use the phones and technology to their advantage rather than being a prisoner to those things.
Yeah. So going off that, what would be one challenge you would give our community and listeners individually to break down these barriers of gender stereotypes ourselves, not on social media, just individually in our own lives?
I think a big part of it is trying to realize like what you stand for. You mean what you stand for, and as I mentioned before, what your heart's telling you. And that'll be different for everyone, for sure. But if an actionable thing, I think having a conversation with maybe your parents, there's probably someone for me who I constantly challenged, my dad, who's a beautiful man, one of the best men I know. But he was brought up in a completely different time to me. So his views were completely different. And yeah, I think through having conversations with him and trying my best not to judge my dad and trying my best just to understand where he come from, why he has these beliefs, I think that is where I've found the most joy. And I've slowly but surely, I wouldn't say challenged him, but we've had conversations and I've challenged myself and I've challenged him throughout the process. And I think that's a beautiful thing. So having the conversations, having the hard conversations, and also going into those conversations thinking that you're not right. You mean thinking that you've got something to learn. You mean thinking that whatever my dad says, I might not agree with it, but there could be something in that I'm like, oh, okay, no worries. Rather than going there thinking that I'm right. I think that's a really valuable thing to take into a conversation as well.
Yeah. Is there a way that like you'd encourage people to kind of, you know, you said before that conversations are one of the most powerful tools we can use. Is there a way to encourage this? I guess young people to encourage this.
Yeah, I think obviously podcast is beautiful because you can have long form conversations and like someone in like America, Joe Rogan, he has like 3.5-4 hour conversations at times. And I think it's very unnatural. How often do we get to do that as humans? But I think going in there with an objective, and as I said, I think having the mindset of like, we know what we believe in. And yes, of course, a lot of the time, no one likes to be proven wrong or no one likes to think that they're wrong. But going in there with an idea that like, we don't know everything and we've got so much to learn from other people, even the people that we don't agree with. So I think going in with that mindset, then you can always learn and always have a bit of a growth mindset and try and pick up everything from so many different areas and having conversations. And when we constantly go in and think that our views are right and what we think is right, I think that we're kind of blinded by what we're hearing because we just think that we're right. And I think, I don't know if there's that much growth in that personally.
No, that's so true. I feel like people have such a closed mindset these days. I feel like to change, so you know, need to have that conversation to open it up.
I think it's an important takeaway to start a conversation with an open mind, like you said, you draw on experiences of other people in the community who have strong opinions, but still they are able to connect with others who are complete opposite because they're respecting their voice as well, just as they wish to be treated themselves.
Yeah, it's Gabor Maté, who's one of my favourite men in this world. He's coming towards the end of his life, but he's an exceptional man in childhood growth and development and addiction and trauma and stuff like that. And he says this beautiful quote. It's like, people are just doing the best they can with what they know. It's like, people haven't had the same experiences as me. They haven't had the life experiences to make a different decision in that moment or to say a different thing in that moment. People are just doing the best they can with what they know. And when I heard that, it just gave me a lot more empathy for other people. It gave me a lot more empathy for myself as well when I make the wrong decision or I do something that's not right. And I think it's a beautiful quote. People are just doing the best they can with what they know.
So going off that, what's one thing that we can do to help and promote these people that might just not be aware of the ideas behind like breaking gender barriers and stuff like that? How can we help have a conversation with the people that aren't thinking the way we are? Or how do we have a, not debate, but how do we have a comfortable conversation about these issues?
I think there's two ways. One, through action and through what we're doing. You mean living our life in an authentic and true way and something that we truly believe. I think that is probably one of the most powerful things. It's like, they will see that, especially for me, my close-knit community and my family, and they see me living this life and they might have, I don't know, they might criticize it, they might judge it. But if I continue living in my true authentic way, they ask questions and they want to know, they're curious. I find it quite interesting that for me, when I'm around my mates that I grew up with, like in a group setting, they're all like kind of taking the piss out of me. It's very much part of the male culture and they're all joking and laughing and I'm all part of it. But then individually, they're like, so what meditation app are you using? What are you writing in your journal? And what podcast are you listening to? Like on an individual level, they really want to know. So I think living your life, your true authentic self, I think is one of the best ways for other people around you to say, oh, okay, all right. And then they start asking themselves questions. It's a bit of a mirror, if that makes sense. So that, and then also, as I said before, just going into conversations and trying your best not to judge the people you're having conversations with, which is hard. I wouldn't say I'm perfect. I definitely do it at times. But just going in and realizing that you're not always right. And us as individuals have always got things to learn from other people, for sure.
A lot of us follow you, obviously, on social media, but it's nice to be able to ask you questions that we're interested in as well. I know that on your story you'll often talk about something that was discussed in the media or a response from someone on social media. But yeah, it's really valuable for us to hear your experience based on questions that we think are relevant to gender stereotypes. So thank you very much.
I appreciate you guys having this conversation. And I think through long form conversation, that's where we'll discover the most about the world.
Yeah.
What do you think we can do to call it out?
Oh, that's a good question. I think the way I'm trying to view the world, because quite often throughout my teenage years, I criticized the people closest to me. I said things like, you're wrong, you're this, you're that. And it actually made them sort of, especially someone like my dad or my brothers, it made them plant their feet in their beliefs harder. But through the Reach Foundation and a few other things, I've slowly but surely just tried to live my life in a true, authentic way and have conversations of understanding and rather than criticism with the people who I love. And I think calling it out is just living your life true, and people who may judge you, may criticize you, if you're truly okay with what you're doing, I think it won't hurt as much. And through respect and through having real conversations rather than criticizing people for not having the same beliefs as you, I think that's how you're going to change the world and call it out best.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for doing this interview. I think we were all pretty excited when we heard you were
definitely.
That's right.
Yeah, thank you for making the time to meet with us over Zoom. We really appreciate it. Is there any questions that you had for us maybe?
Well, I guess the only question, it's like, what are your individually, we'll go around in the circle and we'll start at the left. What's your reasoning behind starting this podcast?
Which way's left?
This way left? Yeah. I reckon for me personally, it's just, I feel like there's been a lack of young people's voice kind of represented in, I don't know, not just the media, but just in general around like large issues in society. So I think, I don't know, this is just a way that I want to get, you know, we want to get people's voices out there. We want young people to feel like they're heard and they have a valued opinion and belief in society and what's going on. So that's fine.
Yeah. I think it's important to promote positive conversations about gender equality and gender stereotypes and stuff like that when there are so many people on the internet now, especially that young people are listening to, that aren't promoting these good ideas that are around gender equality and gender stereotypes and are honestly like building the barrier up even more for young boys and girls on who they have to be or who they think they need to be. So I think it's important that we have people like you to talk to that are positive influences on these issues and share that with the school community.
Mm. Well, I think it's important to talk about these issues as they're often not as visible. I know there are some issues within our society which cause a bit of a rift with which are obviously visible, whereas this one requires, as you've mentioned, more of a conversation, and it needs a societal shift within our attitudes. It's not something as obvious as just putting a poster up. It needs to, yeah, we need to start a conversation with our peers, 100%.
Yeah, and then I feel like I'm here sort of to like convey my own experiences being a young man. As we're talking a lot of these like binary gender issues, having someone like me on this panel is sort of really, I feel like, valuable to be able to get a young man's experience as well.
Four fantastic answers. And you are all doing a fantastic job. So I can't wait to listen to this and share it on my social medias, as I'm sure that many people would love to hear this.
Yeah. That'd be awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.